the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be talking about media today, and the very fact that you're listening to this program means that you are living in this media-saturated age, making a decision about how you're going to spend your time, where you're going to devote your attention, and how you're going to filter through all these things happening in the media. For Christians living in this media-saturated age, we face some new decisions, just in terms of discernment, in terms of figuring out how we can be good analysts of what we're hearing in the news, qualified and competent consumers of media products. And this gets right down to the whom do you trust issue. We're going to be talking about one particular vehicle, one particular institution of the international media, that the New York Times. We're going to be looking at a statement by the leader of the New York Times saying that it may not even be published on paper in 5 years and he doesn't care, because we're going to an internet age. We're going to be looking at a controversy at the New York Times over some recent reports on marriage. We've been talking about it on this program, and the paper's public editor has come out with a scathing denunciation of the paper's own coverage of this issue. We're going to be talking about all this in terms of how to look at the news and make these decisions, how to basically engage the media and know what we're doing, know how we should read an article, how we should hear a report. We're going to be talking about this, and I'm going to want to know how you are changing the way you engage the media. And my guess is that you have made some big changes just in the last several years. Just the development of the internet, for instance, and the fact that we're getting more and more of our information over the internet is one massive change. But there are other changes as well. The change from television to radio news is a very significant thing. The fact that an awful lot of the public conversation in this country now takes place over the radio airwaves is something that is fairly new. It's a massive development that that at least I, along with many others, think is a good thing for the country. I want to know how you're changing the way you engage the media and how you are helping your kids, your young people, and your friends and family to understand what these changes mean for all of us. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, a review of some issues in the news. Prime Minister José Sócrates of Portugal says that even though the referendum that would have legalized abortion in his country fell short of the voter turnout necessary to be effective, he is nonetheless going to press on in that country for the legalization of abortion. His statement is now that even though the vote was overwhelmingly for the legalization of abortion, and even though the voter turnout was too low for this nonetheless to be enacted into law, he says that the government will find a way to respond to this. And using his own words, he said abortion will be legalized in Portugal one way or the other. The people spoke with a clear voice, he added. Now, this is a reminder to us that the issue of abortion as a controversy is not just about the United States. It's about a worldwide phenomenon. More and more, we are hearing controversies over the issue of abortion. This shocks a lot of people. Some of the most fascinating response I have seen to this is on the part of the left, of the pro-abortion advocates and the pro-abortion industry, who are, I think, honestly amazed that there continues to be such a public opposition to abortion. Now, I'm not going to overblow the statistics here. One of the things we're going to be talking about on this program is how to be careful with statistics. It is not fair to say that America has an overwhelmingly pro-life majority if you mean by that that the majority of Americans would want to outlaw abortion in all circumstances. Abortion has become a more nuanced issue in the view of the muddled middle of the American public. It's that way in many other countries as well. Now, I don't want to leave listeners in that muddle. That's why we're going to be talking about these issues again and again on this program. But when you look at something like Portugal, you realize that here you have a traditionally Catholic, traditionally conservative country, and it looks like it's moving to the left. At the same time, however, USA Today is reporting that there are new and fast-growing pro-life movements throughout Europe. In many of the countries of Europe, there has been no real pro-life activism for the last 30 or 40 years, and that is changing. Jeffrey Stinson, writing in USA Today, says it looks like that the issue of abortion as a controversy is not going to go away. If anything, it may reemerge in countries that had settled into some kind of pro-abortion consensus for some years. So what we have here is a mixed picture worldwide. We have Portugal apparently moving left, and I want you to hear in particular what the Prime Minister said. This is, you talk about bad arguments, here's a bad argument. In the New York Times, he's reported as saying, this is Prime Minister Socrates of Portugal, who is saying the choice placed before Portugal is whether it resigns itself to staying in the group of the most conservative countries or if it embraces modernity. Well, there you have it, embraces modernity. In other words, look at his mathematical formula. Modernity equals abortion. Now, that is the kind of worldview that gets us into this kind of trouble. And again, democracy has consequences. When a country elects a party that has as its first minister a man who holds to this position, this is Prime Minister José Socrates of Portugal, then you're looking at a country that inevitably will at least move in that direction, if not fully, towards the adoption and embrace of abortion. Democracy has consequences. That's what we're looking at, not only in the United States in terms of the increasing fervor over the presidential sweepstakes for 2008, but worldwide as well. You'd be shocked, perhaps, to know that one of the most controversial issues worldwide right now has to do with organs for donation. There is a vast unmet need for donated organs, kidneys in particular. Kidneys are the number one need right now and the number one market, both legal and illegal, internationally, for donated organs. A major news report coming out of India last week, reported by Scott Carney at Wired News, indicating that a large number of Indians are actually selling their kidneys in an illegal market. And it looks like the government there is, well, for a large part, just turning its blind eye towards what they know is this illegal practice. More than 500 people across the state of Tamil Nadu said they've sold their kidneys to organ brokers in violation of a ban enacted in 1994. Now, the Indian government's trying to figure out what to do about this. One man from the Tamil Nadu Transplant Authorization Committee said it's an open secret. It's either approve a transplant with forged documents or a patient's going to die. In other words, this is not an easy issue. Now, some of you may be listening to this saying, well, this idea that you could sell your organ for profit, now that sounds like something that might happen in a country far, far away, but not here in the United States. But there is a growing debate over this issue. There are some libertarians in particular who are arguing that Americans should have a constitutional right if they would so choose to sell their organs. Now, what we have here is the intersection of a dramatic need for more donated organs, and evidently a market that is ready to sell them. The argument against this first and foremost is that those that would be most incentivized to sell their organs would be the poor, and thus this would be a way of oppressing the poor. I'm raising this today because even as this kind of news over the situation in India is garnering international attention, we need to be thinking about how we as Christians would respond to this argument. And we'll be following on this program as well. The other big controversy right now over donated organs has to do with the age of the recipient. The Chicago Tribune last week, reporter Judith Graham, bringing to attention a big debate among bioethicists concerning how you decide which patient should receive a donated organ. And some are suggesting that age ought to be a crucial factor. Back to Judith Graham's report, she writes, if someone needs a kidney transplant today, it doesn't matter if she's 25 or 60 years old. What counts is how long she spent waiting for a suitable organ to become available. That would change under a controversial new proposal by the nation's organ transplant network that was unveiled last week in Dallas. The plan would give kidneys to patients who would live longest after a transplant, not those who have languished longest on waiting lists. This is an excruciating decision. And it calls for the keenest thinking. And certainly as Christians, we need to think about how our understanding of human dignity rooted in scriptural authority can be reconciled with this kind of argument. How do we come up with a way of deciding who shall live and who shall die? Who shall get the organ and who shall wait? Who shall be able to sell the organ and who shall not? Folks, there's a lot going on in this country sometimes that seems, well, just downright odd. One of those things is the fact that while you're talking about controversies, you might miss a controversy going on among American educators. They're trying to decide, especially at the middle school, junior high level, how to handle students who turn in written reports and written responses with, IM speak, instant messaging speak. They're sending in the kind of written response that they are now accustomed to writing on internet instant messaging services. All the little cutesies that come along. And as the teachers are now saying, it appears that all these little IM speak new formulations mean more to these kids than the actual words. Some of them seem to be losing track with the ability to write in recognizable English. Just imagine the books we might be reading in the future, folks. Let's hope not. We'll be right back for Intelligent Christian Conversation about how Christians engage the media. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. There have been vast changes in the way we experience the media in recent years. Just think about how, for instance, you probably read at least some of your news or obtained some of your news over the internet in the last 24 hours. Many of the most fast-breaking news reports are coming over the internet through YouTube and other things. There's even basically an amateur news world that has emerged over the internet. But other changes also are taking place. Of course, just go back 30 years in American history. What do you have? You have three major networks. They had scheduled nightly news. And other than that, you didn't have much recourse to the news. Maybe you could catch the top of the hour on your local radio station. But other than that, when the news was over, it was over. Now we have 24/7 satellite and cable news networks. We have the proliferation of news just about all the time. You can find it. We have satellite radio, expanding radio far beyond even what broadcast signals could take. And you have, in many homes, digital systems, whether they are by satellite dish or by cable, that will bring upwards of 700, 800, 900 channels into the home. So we're talking about going from something like a little bathtub of the media to a giant ocean of the media in one generation. Now, this presents different challenges, I think, for different generations. For older Americans, it's a way of adjusting to, well, who really is the authority anymore? Is it Huntley and Brinkley and Cronkite? Well, you know, those names have disappeared off of the average American conversation. Gone is the day when the network anchor had such a large role in defining the news in terms of how we understood it, how we received it, and frankly, even what was and was not reported. That's gone. And so today we have thousands and thousands of media outlets, and the big question is, how do we as Christians, not just as Americans, but how do we as Christians filter through a lot of this? The development of talk radio is a huge phenomenon. And, of course, we're a part of that right here. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to George calling from Fargo, North Dakota. Listen on XM170. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Al. I appreciate it. Appreciate your commentaries and program as well. I think as a biblical world Christian, I find that I'm discerning, seeking to discern more and more what is being put on the media. Like you said earlier, there's a lot of choices out there, and it's tough to find, quote-unquote, the correct one. And basically what I've done is held the Bible is the standard to what I'm hearing, and just trying to discern how to filter it all in. And it's become quite a process.
Well, you have to put work into it. I really appreciate that point, George. You really do have to put work into it, because we are no longer just passive recipients, and we should never have been in the first place. One of the things we now know, by the way, is looking back at the television news, broadcast news, of the, say, the 60s and the 70s was that there was a whole lot of editorial filtering going on there. And all three of the networks are basically leaning pretty far to the left, far more than is checked now with the existence of rival satellite and cable networks, with the internet, where you can instantly have an internet swarm on top of a really atrocious report. I mean, just look at the 2004 presidential campaign. It was a perfect storm of controversies over the media, sometimes even more so than the candidates. And, George, your point about work is just really well taken. I think there are a lot of us that, well, maybe aren't willing to put that kind of work into it. And here's what I would suggest. Let me just give a pointer right up front. Never become dependent upon too limited a set of media authorities. Just don't allow yourself to be trapped in too small a room where the voices are too limited. One of the good things about the explosion of all these media sources around us is that it's more difficult for something reckless to or heavily biased or manipulative to go past without someone at least calling it for what it is. And that's why if you look at several different newspapers, and by the way, you don't have to spend an hour with each one. That'd be impossible. But if you learn how to scan a lot of what's going on, or if you see a news story, one of the most interesting things to do, this is one concrete suggestion I have. If there's a big news story and you're trying to figure it out, one of the things you can do is go to the internet, go to Google, and just put in the issue and hit news. Go to Google News and see how it will sort this. And it's going to sort it with an array of all the news stories. You can go down to the bottom of that section and hit all, and then you can pick and choose. You can kind of like, here's some from the right, here's some from the left, here's some from America, here's some from Europe, here's some from the heartland, here's some from the East Coast, and that becomes far more interesting. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I mentioned at the top of the hour that the New York Times publisher, Arthur Sulzberger, has suggested that the New York Times may no longer be printed on paper, even 5 years from now. Now, that is a massive shift. You're talking about the New York Times, often known as the old gray lady, the dominant newspaper of the world. It's been published and printed in broadside for well over 100 years, broadside being the big newspaper format we're all familiar with. That's what you're used to, you know, seeing at the breakfast table. You open it up, it's this big piece of paper with all kinds of words. And Mr. Sulzberger is saying that just may not make it. As a matter of fact, he seems to be pretty clear that this is not going to make it. He says within 5 years, it just may be all online. The New York Times is shifting its development and its research towards how it can increase its online presence. The New York Times over the last couple of years has doubled its online readership to 1.5 million a day. That means, well, just compare it to this, 1.1 million for the print edition. So already there are more persons reading the New York Times on the internet than holding it in their hands. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that even the most dominant newspaper over the last several years on the international scene is now not going to be really a paper. It's what Nicholas Negroponte of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, calls the transformation of information from atoms to bits. Atoms being stuff you hold in your hands, bits being stuff which is just digitalized information. That's the way we're going to be getting it. Now, the reason I mention the New York Times is because it is often recognized not only as one of the most authoritative newspaper sources, everybody wants to know what the New York Times has to say, but it is often exposed as also leaning left. Not a little bit left, but far left. And that's certainly true of its op-eds and editorial page. But more recently, there have been controversies over some of its reports dealing, for instance, with the issue of marriage. A reporter by the name of Sam Roberts has written at least two notorious pieces suggesting that marriage is on the rocks. Just a few weeks ago, he wrote an article suggesting that more than half of all women do not live with a husband. 51% do not live with a husband. And what we discovered looking more closely at the article is that this was really a way of manipulating the statistics. The Center for Marriage at Rutgers University is real clear. Over 90% of all American women will marry. And most American women right now are living with a husband. And so how do they get to 51% without? Well, some of you may have been reading about this. Sam Roberts, the reporter, actually included in that report girls 15 and older. Now, most of us don't consider 15-year-old girls unmarried women. But the other thing he did was to take a group of women who reported that they were not then currently living with their husbands, not because they're estranged from them, but because, for instance, they've been deployed to Iraq. Well, it's not fair to say they're unmarried, but the New York Times was playing fast and loose with statistics, trying to make a moral point, trying to make marriage appear to be increasingly sidelined in this culture. Well, yesterday, the New York Times public editor, that's the ombudsman for the paper, Byron Calmy, wrote a review in which the paper issued a devastating critique of its own reporter and its own report. We'll be back with more about that in just a moment, but this is a warning to us as we engage the media. The number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255, and I'd love to hear from you. Some of you out there are college students. I'd love to know, how do you engage the news media? I don't just mean the arts and entertainment media, movies and all the rest, but where do you consider to be the place to go for authoritative news coverage? Where do you go? Here's a frightening thing. Well, perhaps I shouldn't load it that heavily. Here's an interesting thing. An awful lot of college students and high school students are going to the Comedy Channel for the Jon Stewart program, The Daily Show, and the Stephen Colbert Show. That's where they're getting the news. It's all cynicism all the time. And it wouldn't be so bad if they weren't so good at it. That's a problem. They really do package it in a way that is slick and often incredibly funny. That attracts a younger audience. Older adults, I'd love to hear from you. Where are you going? How have your habits changed? You look back over the last 10, 15, 20 years, you know, what are you reading now you weren't reading before? And then I'd love to hear what you're doing with parents, as parents, with your kids. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. One of the big questions is, whom do you trust? I think it's really important that we look at this report out of the New York Times today. Sam Roberts wrote that a majority of women are now living without a spouse. Marriage is being sidelined. You know, you had scholars like Stephanie Kuntz predictably saying this is just another sign of the weakening bonds of marriage in the society and all this. And it turned out to be hogwash. It turned out to be sheer manipulation of the data. Anyone who had access, as we all do now, thanks to the Internet, to the United States Census Bureau's data, could find out it was absolute hogwash, counting 15-year-old girls as unmarried women. Counting women whose husbands have been deployed in Iraq as unmarried or not living with a spouse. That's the kind of thing that really breeds cynicism when you consider how a story like that has a half-life. I guarantee you, if you go to the Internet right now, you can find people citing that news story as the authoritative report on the weakening of marriage, and we now know it was complete hogwash. And the New York Times has acknowledged that. And we'll put up a link to that at the website overnight because it's that important. When the New York Times comes out, Byron Calame, the public editor, just comes out and lambastes the article. Listen to this one paragraph. The failure to prominently and clearly explain the methodology of the survey used was one of several journalistic lapses I found in the handling of this story. Several journalistic lapses. In the story. He goes on to chronicle them. And hats off, by the way, to the New York Times. This is an adult responsibility display here. The newspaper knows its reporter made a mistake, and they've come clean on it. I only wish they'd done it a bit earlier. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Lots of people on the line. Let's go to Matt, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Dr. Mohler. You know, one thing that kind of scares me about this subject is that, you know, when you go about, like, all these, you know, you said, like, a sea of media, you don't just have, like, different interpretations of the truth. You have different facts. And we're going to have millions of people growing up today with, you know, when you try to witness somebody, they're not just going to have a totally different, you know, belief system. They're going to believe, you know, what's false is true and what's true is false. And, you know, that provides a new challenge, you know, as a Christian when you're trying to witness.
Well, Matt, it sure does. You know, this whole postmodern culture tends to undercut confidence that authorities have any right to be accepted as authorities. If those who oppose as truth tellers can be trusted actually to be telling the truth. And when cynicism, by the way, comes into the culture over this, it inevitably filters down to preachers and pastors and all the rest. You know, how do I trust that you know what you're talking about? How do I trust that you're telling me this out of the goodness of your heart rather than some kind of goal you have, that some kind of covert motive that you're hiding? You know, I have to say, though, Matt, in the pluses and the minuses of all of this, one of the big pluses is for the church, we do get to have our say in the midst of this. And if nothing else, the proliferation of these media outlets and the ability to be on the internet, and frankly, the ability of a program like this to be on the Salem Radio Network, that's something that didn't exist several years ago when we can even have this conversation. So, there are pluses and minuses with all of this, but I think one of our responsibilities is to accentuate the advantages. And for the sake of our children and our churches and ourselves, we need to try to minimize the negatives. And that means developing discernment. I mentioned earlier, one thing we can do is read and listen to multiple sources. Multiple sourcing is very, very important. One of the other things we can do is kind of thoughtfully watch one report and then another, and then maybe another with our kids and say, all right, how did this person handle the story? How did this network cover this? Helping our kids to be able to make that kind of discernment is really, really important, to be able to discern where, well, it's likely someone's bias came in, where someone carefully filtered the statistics in order to manipulate them and all the rest. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. What are you doing swimming in the sea of the new media? We'll be right back. Welcome back. I guess if you could reduce it to a three-word motto, it would be learn to discern. And furthermore, let's teach our children to discern as well. I can remember, I told someone this the other day, I can remember in my grandparents' home, my mother's parents, there was a red Bakelite radio. I don't remember the television being on there much at all, but the radio was on, and their source of news was Paul Harvey. And that's where the news came in. And for a vast segment of America, kind of heartland America, that was the news, whatever Paul Harvey said. But a lot of people didn't know that Paul Harvey was also reading commercials at the same time he was doing the news. It was hard to tell sometimes. You always got to listen with discernment. Let's go to Michael, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller, for taking my call. I wanted to respond. In the news media for television, I find Fox News to be the only reliable source. I have no credibility anymore with ABC, CBS, NBC, Katie Couric, Mike Wallace, it's just not there.
Okay.
The print media, I think my local paper doesn't do it for me, and so I've recently started subscribing to U.S. News and World Report.
Yeah, and U.S. News and World Report, by the way, is kind of an old stalwart among the three, generally recognized as the most conservative of the three traditional weeklies with the Newsweek, Time, and U.S. News and World Report. So it is kind of interesting. Michael raises Fox News. Now, let's look for a moment at how Fox News has changed the cable landscape. Until the development of Rupert Murdoch's Fox News, CNN had the franchise on the cable news industry 24/7. And there's no doubt that Fox has changed things in a big way. First of all, Fox, we report, you decide, their motto. They came busting into the cable market by saying, we're going to treat you as a very different viewer than the competition treats you. And, of course, you do have, some real things to look at there. Fox almost assuredly starts out more conservative just in terms of their lineup of hosts and all the rest. Although I will point out that some of their hosts aren't as conservative as they may first appear. Bill O'Reilly, for instance, I've been on his show. Enjoy being on his show. Always a lively conversation, but in many ways he's more of a libertarian than a conservative. You've got an array of people even on Fox, but what you have here is a check and balance that did not exist before. Good and well that CNN's looking over its shoulder at Fox News. And by the same token, Fox News is kind of looking over its shoulder at CNN. That's not a bad thing. And Michael's talking about how he learned to trust one network more than the rest. But again, I would just warn any of us from having too small a set. But boy, I will tell you, when you look at things that have changed the media economy, the landscape was vastly changed by the emergence of Fox News. And of course, now you not only have Fox, you have MSNBC, and a lineup that that will mean more rather than less news coverage headed into the future. Let's go to Holland, Michigan, where Steve's on the line. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, hello. I just want to say that I lost a lot of faith in the media, especially after Hurricane Katrina. I went down there twice to do the relief work, and the media did no justice, especially where I went down to Waveland, Mississippi. And, that place was just totally destructed. Compared to, New Orleans was flooded, and that's a terrible thing. But I just want to realize that, what you're just talking about, discernment, that I had to, you know, start making choices for my own instead of just accepting what I hear on television and making it, you know, finding out the truth on my own more than just what people tell me.
Steve, that is a massively important comment to make there. And it goes back to the issue of selectivity. And after Katrina, one of the things to keep in mind is the old, well, even in local network news directors, local affiliates, they used to say, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. What does television news camera, what do the television news cameras get drawn to? Flashing blue and red lights, murder scenes, fires, smoke in the air, massive kinds of visuals, New Orleans, water in the streets of a major city, tiles torn off the top of the Superdome. That's the kind of thing. And it, boy, it is a big story. You look at New Orleans and think of the concentration of humanity there. But by the same token, Steve, you're really reminding us that there's a big story there that's just missed if you on television news are really drawn to the visuals. Because in many ways, the most important stories aren't the ones that will provide the kind of visuals you're looking for. And so that's a very good reminder. Steve said that he really had to kind of learn how to really dig into this information and figure out a lot of these things for himself. You know, while we're speaking of selectivity and the news media and all the rest, one of the things to keep in mind is that many of the news stories we see are really not the most important thing happening in the day. Now here I'm going to take a slap at all the cable television networks, which tend to get on sensational crime stories. Now, there's no doubt that the murder of Lacey Peterson, for instance, a couple of years ago, and her unborn baby was a big story. But, you know, if you look at the total number of hours, yes, I don't mean minutes, I mean hours and hours, days and days, devoted on the cable networks to that, you would think it was the most important story in America, not by a long shot. I mean, you just look at the massive stories of moral importance taking place that didn't get on there at all. Selectivity is a big part of this. I mean, Fox News itself has an enormous number of minutes devoted to stories such as missing people and the rest. Now, we should, of course, be concerned about that. But in many ways, what you have is an eclipse of news stories when you have the cable networks in danger becoming kind of a bulletin board of the sensational rather than the kind of stalwart distributors and handlers of the news that we need. Let me tell you, anyone who does what we do in terms of trying to gain the public ear with something to say, we have to earn our credibility. And that's why I hope on this program we establish the credibility to try to speak honestly and fairly, to say this is a place where you can count on intelligent Christian conversation. One of the things I hope to do is to encourage, when we're dealing with major issues, where you should go elsewhere in order to get material that will help you to figure all this out, help a family, perhaps, to do the kind of multi-sourcing we're talking about. So in the spirit of that, let me just offer a couple of suggestions here. And even as we get ready to go into a break, I'll be back with more in just a moment. One of the things you need to do, perhaps, is establish a set of bookmarks on your computer that would be the kinds of news sources that you would want to check on a daily basis. I have a daily list. And one of the first things I do in the morning is just look at that list. Oftentimes, up late at night, I can even do it because a lot of the newspapers are posted at midnight. And so you can pretty quickly start looking at that. You can get ahead of the game. And, for instance, if you look at the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times, those both on the left, also check out the Chicago Tribune, which is more conservative. If you're looking at USA Today, you know, you also need to look at the Wall Street Journal, which is generally more conservative. And, of course, you're not limited to the big names of the broadcast and print media anymore. There are some news sources, some blogs, some resources like townhall.com available to you, where you can find what you're not going to find elsewhere. My commentaries, by the way, along with those of many of my colleagues, are found at townhall.com. That can be a real benchmark place where you can find a lot of real worthwhile material. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I'm going to confess with you a matter of pride, and that is there are certain things you'll never hear on this program. You just think of some of the leading news stories of the last several days over the weekend. I'm not even going to mention some people by name. They're just not going to be in our discussion here. It's because, frankly, far too much attention is given to some of these issues in the major media anyway. The last thing we need to do is just to add more flack in the air about these things. One of my purposes is to try to think through, from a Christian worldview perspective, what it is we ought to be talking about. Now, just given the news today, given the news over the weekend, there were 100 things we could have talked about today, all of them basically with some profit. But it seemed to me, with this report coming out from the New York Times and this amazing disclosure from the public editor, that the paper admits huge journalistic lapses in this report on marriage, it's a reminder to us that one of the issues of our Christian discipleship is the development of discernment in engaging the media. And I know there's some out there who say, I don't even engage the media. Well, yes, you do. You're swimming in this environment in which what is talked about in the news, what's on CBS and ABC and CNN and Fox News, what's on the comedy channel with The Daily Show and Stephen Colbert, all this stuff is being discussed. You know, perhaps different circles and different subcultures are perhaps hearing different things from different sources, but the reality is there is no one that's actually living without some immersion in the media. Now, the big question is, do you waste your time just kind of haphazardly coming across this source and that source? Do you do something to try to discipline the development of discernment? Do you do multi-sourcing so you try to minimize the danger of being manipulated? Do you look carefully at statistics? Boy, that story out of the New York Times we're talking about here by Sam Roberts, so actually two articles, both of them had to do with statistics that were manipulated. One of the other things that we can do is be involved in conversations like this with fellow Christians and fellow citizens, saying, you know, what are you finding to be really helpful to you in understanding the issues of the day, understanding what's going on in the news, understanding the kind of issues we're going to face, understanding the issues our kids are going to face, understanding the issues that churches are talking about. I hope, by the way, without any embarrassment, that this program is a part of your agenda for that. I hope this station to which you're now listening is a part of that. The development of talk radio and of Christian radio has been a huge opening for public conversation in America. A lot of voices that never otherwise would have been heard are now being heard. And the fact that you're listening to this station and to this program is one indication of the fact that you believe that's important. This is a very, very interesting time in which to be alive. Today is the 198th birthday of Abraham Lincoln and Charles Darwin. A lot of people are celebrating it as Darwin Day. Instead, we're going to come back tomorrow and talk about some of the new fronts on Christianity and evolution. I think you'll find it interesting. And I'll meet you there. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.